Imagine trying to pass, like a really grueling multi-day bar exam.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but here is the catch. You are only allowed to look at the questions one syllable at a time.
That sounds impossible.
Right. And you have no idea what the world actually is. You just have to guess the very next syllable based entirely on, like, the mathematical probability of words you've seen before.
Just flying totally blind.
Exactly. And that incredibly strange, fragmented process, that is exactly what the artificial intelligence in your smartphone is doing right now. So welcome to the Deep Dive.
Glad to be here.
Today, we are cutting through this massive mountain of jargon surrounding generative AI. We want to expose the hidden mechanics behind all these tools you're using every single day.
Because there is a lot of jargon.
There is so much. And to do this, we're drawing our insights from this really comprehensive source, the Best Foundation Models in Generative AI, complete 2026 guide from Generative AI Masters.
It's a great guide. Really breaks things down.
It does. So, okay, let's unpack this. Because to really grasp the tools we have today, we have to understand this massive, almost invisible paradigm shift in how software itself is built.
Yeah, we are looking at a fundamental transition here. We're moving from deterministic software to probabilistic software.
Deterministic meaning like predictable.
Right, exactly. Historically, if you wanted a computer to do something, a human programmer had to sit down and write explicit logical rules.
Like, if this happens, do that.
Exactly. If a user clicks this button, load that page. But the systems we are talking about today, they aren't following hard-coded rules at all.
Right.
They are operating on vast statistical probabilities. It's a totally different ballgame.
And the anchor for all of this, the core concept of this entire shift, is something called the foundation model, which, by the way, I found this really interesting. It isn't just some slick marketing term cooked up in a Silicon Valley boardroom to sell you subscriptions.
No, not at all. It's actually an academic term.
Right. It was coined by researchers back in 2021, I think, at Stanford Center for Research on Foundation Models.
Yeah, the CRFM. And they chose that word very deliberately, you know?
How so?
Well, a foundation model is basically a general purpose AI. It's trained on just astronomical amounts of broad data,
Okay, text.
images, computer code, audio, all of it. And it learns these really wide-ranging patterns across all that data so it can act as a base layer.
Tell foundation.
Exactly. Countless different, highly specific applications can then be built on top of it, just like the foundation of a building supports, the entire skyscraper above it.
Right. And to really see why this broke the tech industry wide open, you have to look at the old way we used to build AI.
Oh, the old way was rough.
It really was. Take an email spam filter.
Right.
If you wanted to build one, you had to gather a million examples of spam, a million examples of normal emails, and then train a specialized model from absolute scratch just for that single job.
Just for the spam filter.
Right. And if you later decided, hey, I want an AI to translate French to English,
You had to start entirely over.
totally from scratch.
What's fascinating here is the economics of that shift, because the economics of that old approach were just brutal.
Too expensive.
Incredibly slow and astronomically expensive. It meant AI was mostly confined to massive tech companies or like academic research labs that had the budget to just burn on single-purpose tools.
Wow.
But the foundation model flips that entirely. You spend the millions of dollars to train one incredibly powerful base model once.
Just once.
Right. And then you just reshape it slightly for hundreds of different jobs.
I really like the analogy from the text on this. Think about it like a medical student.
Oh, yeah, that's a perfect way to look at it.
Right, when someone goes to med school, they don't walk in on day one and immediately start practicing open heart surgery.
That would be terrifying.
Very bad idea. They spend years learning broad, generalized knowledge first. They learn biology, chemistry, cellular anatomy, how the respiratory system interacts with the nervous system.
Right, the foundation.
Exactly. That broad foundational training is what allows them to later specialize.
Yeah, that allows them to become a cardiologist or a pediatrician or a neurologist later on.
Without having to go back and relearn what a blood vessel is.
Right. They just add a thin layer of specialized training on top of their massive general knowledge base. And that is exactly what transfer learning is in AI.
So you aren't building a new digital brain for every single task.
No, not at all. You're taking one incredibly well-read brain and just pointing it at a specific job. The cost to add a new capability to your software just plummeted overnight because of this.
That makes so much sense. Okay, let's organize the alphabet soup out there, because everyone throws around these acronyms.
Oh, it's an acronym nightmare right now.
Right. Gen AI, LLMs, GPT. People talk like they all mean the exact same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a clear hierarchy here.
There is. Generative AI is the massive umbrella term for the whole field.
Okay.
Then, one layer down, you have foundation models, which are the base engines powering that field. And then below that, you have specific subsets, like LLMs.
Large language models.
Right. So every LLM is a foundation model, but not every foundation model is an LLM.
Because LLMs are just the text ones.
Exactly. Language models like OpenAI's GPT, Anthropic's Claude, and Meta's Llama, they are processing text and code. But you also have vision models specialized in recognizing and categorizing images.
Oh, like identifying a dog in a photo.
Yeah. And we are increasingly seeing multimodal models like Google's Gemini, which process text, images, and audio simultaneously.
Wait, simultaneously?
Yeah, you could show a multimodal model a video of your car engine making a weird sound and then ask it a text question about what's broken all in the same interaction.
That is wild. And we can't forget diffusion models.
Right, those are huge right now.
These are the engines behind the massive AI art boom, like Stable Diffusion and DALL-E. And the mechanics of how these work are just crazy to me.
It's basically magic with math.
Yeah, you give it a text prompt like a watercolor fox in a misty forest. And it doesn't just pull parts of existing fox pictures together like a collage.
No, it doesn't.
It actually starts with a canvas of complete random visual static.
Like an old broken television screen.
Exactly. And it gradually applies mathematical steps to denoise that static until a perfectly original image emerges.
Right. It's mathematically removing the noise to reveal the underlying pattern that matches your text prompt. The model has learned the statistical relationship between the word fox and the arrangement of pixels that actually look like a fox.
I have to stop you there, though, and kind of push back on this whole categorization.
Okay, sure.
If generative AI is the umbrella and foundation models are the engine, why are we including models that only understand data rather than generating it?
Ah, I see where you're going.
Like, the material includes Google's BERT as a classic foundation model. BERT was integrated into Google Search to understand the actual intent behind conversational queries, right?
Yes, that's correct.
But it doesn't write new text. It just figures out what you're asking.
Yeah.
So if it's not generating anything, calling it generative AI feels like complete marketing spin.
You know, that is a highly debated point in the field, and it's a totally fair critique. The term generative AI has become a bit of a runaway train, honestly.
Like it just absorbed everything?
Pretty much. In strict technical terms, models like BERT are bidirectional encoders. They are focused on representation and understanding, not generation.
Okay.
They look at the words before and after a search term to grasp the context of what you want. The reason they get lumped under this umbrella is because they share the exact same underlying architecture.
The transformer network.
Exactly, the transformer neural network. And they share the same pre-training philosophy as the generative models. Yeah. But you are absolutely right. A model working invisibly in the background to improve your search results is doing fundamentally different work than a model painting a picture of a fox.
Right, okay. So if these models are replacing traditional software and doing everything from generating art to quietly organizing search results, how do you actually build one from scratch?
It's a big process.
Let's walk onto the factory floor, because it happens in four distinct phases, according to the guide.
Yeah.
Step one is pre-training.
And this is the heavy lifting. This is where you feed the model enormous swaths of the public internet.
Like, basically everything.
Yeah. And the model uses self-supervised learning, meaning humans aren't sitting there labeling the data for it.
It's doing it on its own.
Right. It just reads text, hides the next word from itself, guesses what that word is, and then checks if it was right.
Over and over again.
Billions of iterations of guessing the next word. And through that, it doesn't just learn grammar. It actually starts to model the logic, facts, and structure of reality itself.
That's step one. Then step two is adaptation or transfer learning,
yeah.
Taking that broad world model and shifting it to a new domain.
The med student specializing.
Exactly. Then step three is fine tuning and alignment. This is where we get into RLHF.
Reinforcement learning from human feedback.
Right.
And RLHF is crucial because a raw pre-trained model just wants to complete a pattern.
It doesn't care if it's helpful.
Exactly. If you prompt a raw model with, how do I pick a lock? It might just write a fictional story about a burglar because it saw lots of stories like that on the internet.
Right. It's just predicting the next likely words in that context.
Yeah. So RLHF is where human raters actually grade the AI's responses. They teach it to stop acting like a random text predictor and start acting like a helpful conversational assistant that answers the actual questions safely.
Okay, and finally, step four is deployment and inference. The model goes live, and every time it generates a response for a user in real time, that compute process is called inference.
Yes, and I want to point out the immense gap in computing power across those steps.
Oh, here's where it gets really interesting, because the heavy lifting in step one is crazy.
It really is. Pre-training takes thousands of specialized microchips running for months, costing tens of millions of dollars. Only the biggest tech labs can afford step one.
Right, the Google and OpenAI level labs.
Exactly. But the fine-tuning in step three, a single developer with a decent laptop and a few $100 in cloud computing credits can take an open source pre-trained model and fine-tune it for a specific local task.
So let's ground this factory floor in the actual physical mechanics, because getting the vocabulary right is what separates the tourists from the practitioners here.
Very true.
Let's talk about tokens. A token isn't just a word, right? I was reading that a token is more like a syllable.
That's right.
Like if I type the word hamburger, the AI doesn't see one word. It might see ham, burr, and gur as three entirely separate tokens.
That's spot on. And the reason it chops text into these subword tokens is for mathematical efficiency.
Because it's not actually reading English.
No, it reads numbers. It takes every token and maps it into a massive multidimensional grid.
A vector space.
Yes, a vector space. It learns that the token for ham often appears in the same mathematical neighborhood as the token for cheese or burger. By breaking words down, it can handle misspellings, prefixes, and massive vocabularies much more efficiently than trying to memorize every single whole word in the dictionary.
Okay, so that's tokens. But we also constantly hear that these models have 70 billion parameters, or over a trillion parameters. What physically is a parameter?
Think of parameters as millions and millions of tiny dials and knobs inside the model's neural network.
Like a giant mixing board.
Exactly. And every single time the AI reads a sentence during that massive pre-training phase, it adjusts these dials slightly to represent the relationships between concepts.
Can you give an example?
Sure. The dials connecting the concept of king and queen get turned closer together. The dials connecting king and toaster get turned further apart.
Because they have nothing to do with each other.
Right. So a model with 70 billion parameters literally has 70 billion of these tiny mathematical adjustments defining its worldview. More parameters generally mean a higher capacity to capture incredible nuance, tone, and complex logic.
Which brings us to the context window.
Yeah, the context window is the model's working memory. It is a hard limit on how many tokens it can consider at one single time when you give it a prompt.
So if it fills up, it just forgets.
Yes. If a model has a context window of 8,000 tokens and you paste a 10,000 token legal contract into the prompt box, it will literally suffer from amnesia. It will forget the first 2,000 tokens of the contract by the time it gets to the end.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and expanding this window is one of the hardest engineering challenges right now, because every time you double the context window, the computing power required to process it actually quadruples.
Okay, so we've got our deployed, fine-tuned model. It's slicing words into tokens, adjusting billions of parameter dials, and holding it all in its context window. But there's a massive elephant in the room when you try to actually use this in a business. It has a fatal flaw, which is the hallucination problem.
Yeah, hallucinations are a direct result of the mechanics we just talked about.
Because it's just predicting the next word.
Exactly. Because the model is ultimately a statistical engine predicting the most likely next token, it doesn't actually know what a fact is. It isn't querying a secure database.
It's just guessing beautifully.
Right. If you ask it something highly specific that wasn't well represented in its training data, it will just confidently string together statistically plausible words. It will invent court cases, fabricate financial numbers, or completely make up a company policy.
And in a consumer chatbot, that's annoying. Mm. But in an enterprise setting, it's a massive legal and financial liability.
No, absolutely.
Like if a customer asks a retail support bot for a return policy, and the bot hallucinates a response saying, keep the product and we will refund you double your money, the company has to eat that cost.
And that has actually happened. The industry recognized this roadblock immediately, and they rallied around a very specific architectural solution to fix it.
RAG.
Right. Retrieval Augmented Generation, or RAG.
So the mechanics of RAG, it feels like we're basically just shifting the AI from a closed book test to an open book test.
That is exactly what it is.
Right. Instead of forcing the AI to try and memorize every single policy in the world inside its parameter dials, we just hand it the specific document and say, read this and answer based only on this.
The open book test is the perfect way to understand it. Mechanically, here is what happens in a RAG system. Step one. The user asks a question, like, what is the return policy for defective laptops?
Okay.
Step two. The system pauses the AI. It takes that question and searches the company's private factual database to find the exact PDF of the return policy.
So it does a regular search first.
Right. Step three. It grabs the text of that PDF and automatically pastes it into the AI's context window behind the scenes.
Sneaking it into the memory.
Yep. And step four. It tells the AI, using only the text I just provided, answer the user's question.
It totally anchors the model to reality.
It drastically reduces the chance of hallucination because you aren't relying on the model's internal statistical memory anymore. You are just using its incredible language reasoning skills to summarize a verified document.
That is brilliant.
And research shows this. McKinsey research points out that these enterprise R assistants are currently one of the fastest spreading AI architectures in the corporate world.
Wow.
It is the bridge between the raw intelligence of a foundation model and the strict factual requirements of a real business.
But, you know, even with our AG, we can't fall asleep at the wheel here. The model can still misinterpret the text you give it, or the search system might pull up an outdated version of the company policy.
Oh, for sure.
So the human in the loop, evaluating the output and verifying the source, is still a critical component. You can never confuse this sounds grammatically perfect with this is factually correct.
Mm-hmm. And this raises an important question about trust. That verification step is exactly where careers are being made or broken right now.
Which is the perfect pivot. So what does this all mean for you listening to this right now? How do you actually apply this knowledge to your own work without making rookie mistakes?
Well, the material dives deep into practical application.
And the biggest takeaway is this. Before you ever think about touching a parameter dial or attempting to fine-tune a model, you need to master prompt engineering.
Yeah, prompt engineering is the highest leverage, lowest barrier skill you can develop right now.
Just writing good prompts.
It's simply the skill of writing instructions that format the context window perfectly to get the best possible output. Because these models are so sensitive to context, you can solve a surprising number of complex problems just by giving the AI better, more specific instructions.
Like assigning it a persona.
Exactly. Or asking it to break its reasoning down step by step.
Let me challenge the conventional wisdom here, though. If I'm a developer or a company trying to build a new tool, shouldn't I just grab the absolute biggest foundation model with the highest parameter count?
No, you really shouldn't.
Why wouldn't I just buy access to the smartest, biggest brain available?
Because of cost, speed, and overparameterization. Grabbing the biggest model for every task is a classic rookie mistake.
Why?
If you are building a tool that only needs to summarize internal legal memos, a massive 1 trillion parameter model is going to be incredibly slow to generate tokens, and it will cost you a fortune in API fees.
Oh, because you're paying for all that compute power you don't even need.
Right. The reality of modern AI engineering is that a much smaller model, say 8 billion parameters that has been carefully fine-tuned on legal documents, will vastly outperform the giant general purpose model for that specific job.
The med student who specialized.
Exactly. It will run faster, cost pennies on the dollar, and be far less likely to get distracted. Knowing when to use a small, targeted model versus a massive general one is exactly what separates a real engineer from someone just riding the hype.
And the career impact of this knowledge is staggering. We're seeing job titles that didn't exist 3 years ago. Generative AI engineers, prompt engineers, LLM architects. And they're exploding in demand.
And the geography of this talent is fascinating, too. The material specifically highlights Hyderabad as a major, rapidly accelerating hub for these roles.
In India.
Right. Places like HI Tech City and Gachibowli are seeing massive hiring surges from both product companies and service giants.
And why does that matter to someone not living there? Because it shows where the global center of gravity for AI deployment is shifting.
Yes.
It's not just a few researchers in San Francisco anymore. The actual implementation, the building of RGA pipelines, the fine-tuning of enterprise models, that massive scale of engineering work is going global. And the talent pools that master these mechanics first are commanding a massive premium in the remote workforce.
But as the material emphasizes, theoretical knowledge is only the first step.
Right, you can't just memorize terms.
You can memorize all the definitions of tokens and parameters you want, but the real advantage comes from getting your hands dirty.
Building things.
Go to an open source platform like Hugging Face, find a small open foundation model, download it, and actually try to build a small RAG project on your own machine. That is the moment this stops being abstract tech trivia and starts becoming a tangible, incredibly valuable career skill.
That is great advice. Let's bring all these threads together. We started with a realization that the era of building a single, narrow AI for a single task is completely dead.
It's gone.
We've entered the era of the foundation model, the medical student of artificial intelligence, broadly trained once on massive data, serving as a versatile base layer for thousands of applications.
And from there, we looked at the underlying mechanics, how words are chopped into tokens, how relationships are mapped across billions of parameter dials, and how predicting the next syllable scales up into an engine that models reality.
We traced the factory floor from pre-training the base, to fine-tuning it with human feedback, to deploying it into the real world.
Right.
And we unpacked how techniques like Argate act as an open book test, anchoring these probabilistic engines to private factual data to solve the hallucination problem for enterprise businesses.
It's a totally different way of thinking about software. And understanding these structural mechanics is what allows you to actually build and direct these systems effectively.
Before we wrap up, I want to leave you, our listener, with a thought to chew on. We talked about how these models are fine-tuned in step 3 using RLHF.
Reinforcement learning from human feedback.
Right. Humans are literally grading the AI, providing the ultimate ground truth for how it should behave, how it should reason, and what is safe. But if these foundation models are getting so incredibly capable, they can pass complex coding exams and synthesize thousands of pages of data in seconds.
Yeah.
What happens when these base models become sophisticated enough to start fine-tuning and grading each other?
That's an AI generating the training data and grading the outputs for the next generation of AI.
Exactly. If the human in the loop is replaced by an AI feedback loop, who is acting as the foundation then? If the models are writing their own curriculum, are we still guiding the medical student, or is the student building its own medical school?
That is a profound structural question. And as these models become more autonomous, it is a reality the industry is going to have to face very soon.
It's definitely something to ponder during your next meeting. So the next time you type a prompt into an AI tool, remember you aren't just looking at a deterministic calculator following a set of hard-coded rules.
Not anymore.
You are interacting with a vast probabilistic engine, a foundation model that has mapped the entire statistical structure of the internet, just waiting to adjust its billions of dials based entirely on the specific instructions you give it. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.